The enduring images from the 2013 Boston Marathon bombing are of mass carnage. Innocent people with their limbs blown off by two pressure cooker bombs placed near the finish line. Today, in day 14 of the federal death penalty trial of Zahar Zanayev, the admitted bomber, the prosecution demonstrated that those bombs were intended to cause maximum death and destruction. And they even put models of the bombs in the hands of the jury. From the Moakley Federal Courthouse, this is Finish Line, inside the Boston Marathon bombing trial. I'm David Boeri for WBUR.
And I'm Kevin Cullen from the Boston Globe.
Kevin, the last full day of testimony, it brings us full circle. We started with the bombings, we end with the
bombings. We're back on Boylston Street.
Let's start with witness number 88, though.
Ed Knapp.
Ed Knapp, FBI agent, bomb technician.
Former Navy SEAL, even in his 50s, still acts like one.
And so he takes us, for the first time, I think, for the jury, it's the first time to see how a bomb works, how these bombs, especially these at the finish line, work. So he explains what we know. They're pressure cookers. They're filled with a low explosive powder, like a firecracker, pyrotechnic powder, they call it. And what's interesting, every explosion needs a detonator or a triggering device, and this happens to be a Christmas bulb.
Yes. The other day, David, we saw that they had seized from the Tsarnaev family apartment at 410 Norfolk Street in Cambridge. They had seized a bunch of Christmas lights, and it struck us odd. It's like, why would a devout Muslim household have Christmas lights? Well, today that answer was provided. It was, for lack of a better term, the triggering device. It was a Christmas light, a tiny, one of those small little blinking bulbs. When that went off, the bomb went off.
So what it does, it has that element inside. And so when you take the glass tip off and you put it into, embed it into the explosives, that's going to trigger it. And, of course, you need then to set that off. And so how does that happen? Here we have talk of radio remote-controlled cars. The agent says that just like a guy with his remote-controlled car with a transmitter and receiver, that is the nature of it. And now, of course, we have the purchases by Tamerlan, now dead, of course, killed in the shootout, of these remote-controlled cars and all the different devices that go along with it, suggesting that's how it was triggered.
One of the effective things the government was able to do with Knapp on the stand is to put up on the screen for the jurors to see what came out of Inspire magazine, the magazine that's created and produced by Al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula, which we know, we have seen previous evidence, that this was downloaded onto all the devices that Zahar Zanayev and his brother had access to. And there it basically was a how-to, and the instructions were almost word for word. They talked about pressure cookers being the best use for something like this. It did not have the remote control. It didn't have anything about the remote control.
The defense scored some points.
They did.
Out,
so where did that come from? And the other thing that in the brief cross that Tim Watkins did for the defense, we mentioned in earlier podcasts, we mentioned that Miriam Conrad for the defense, some of her best work was objected to and sustained, and it was technically not part of the evidence. But you and I both know, David, the jurors heard it. Tim Watkins consistently got out there. Were there prints on any of these things, of the bombs, of the materials that they recovered? And the prosecution kept objecting to it. Clearly the implication was is that Zahar Zanayev's prints were not on any of this stuff.
That's right. It's clear Tamerlan's fingerprints were
on everything.
And the prosecution doesn't want that out. The chemist, the FBI chemist who spoke earlier, talked about when you're dealing with gunpowder of this sort, this low explosive powder, like firecracker powder, we'll call it, or pyrotechnic powder. It's so dirty. It's hard to keep your hands clean. It's hard to keep the surfaces clean. It's that mix of stuff that goes everywhere. Opposite of perhaps what you'd expect, it's established that there are just traces, four samples in the Norfolk Street home where Tamerlan lived with his wife and where the government says Zahar was living as well. And the question was asked, did you find residue commensurate with that volume? And the rest of the sentence would have been of powder required to make bombs. From the defense, objection. Of course, the defense would like the jurors to concentrate on that home in Cambridge.
Everything about where the bombs have been made has been hinted at and not said categorically by the government. The government is trying to hint at this, and I'm sure the jury is is taking that away. But there is not conclusive evidence of where these bombs were made or who, in fact, made them.
Consistent with its strategy all along, the defense has wanted to point to Tamerlan. So Tamerlan, for instance, bought those cars that we're talking about to make the transmitter and receiver for the bombs. They also wanted to establish there were residues found in Tamerlan's car and another car that Tamerlan controlled. And then, of course, they talked about Dartmouth, the UMass Dartmouth dorm room.
Yeah, and the defense wants to establish, and they did establish, that they did not find these trace elements in the dorm room that Jahar was staying at UMass Dartmouth. So clearly the defense wants that last image to be that all this powder, when it came to putting together this powder that was necessary for the bombs, it's with Tamerlan, it's not with our guy, it's not with Jahar.
Now, the jurors, they handle that bomb, that mock-up bomb that was made. It's weighted down with powder, and they have the triggering device that set that bulb going that exploded everything.
And the BBs and the nails that caused all the damage, they could see it, they could hold it in their hands.
It took several minutes. It was passed from hand to hand. Each juror weighed it, looked in, held it. Some acted as if it had live ammunition in it. They were all fascinated with it. Huge question rises today, though. At least 8 pounds of powder would have been in those bombs.
Not to mention 3 pounds found in a plastic container on Laurel Street in Watertown after the firefight there. So we're talking right there upwards of 20 pounds of this powder. And you have to sit there and say, where did they get all this?
That's because the continuing story and suggestion has been that they've been getting it out of fireworks. Well, one firecracker has not even a gram. It has 35 thousandths of a gram of powder. Remember, 454 grams makes a pound. That's nothing. So you'd have to amass a vast sum of firecrackers. How does it get there? Where does it come from? And we're told nothing about that.
No, the government's case and the agent that it got up there today, Knapp, and talked about it, said they got it from fireworks. And then you're sitting there and creating in your own mind two guys sitting around unrolling fireworks and creating all this powder. It doesn't make any sense. Now, whether it's relevant, whether at the end of the day the jury says, hey, I want to know how they got all this powder because maybe more people were involved. Now, that's somewhere the government does not want to go.
Until the first medical examiner took the stand, I'm thinking this is a good day for the defense.
It was a good day for the defense.
In its limited objective of saying Tamerlan is the lead, the defendant is following, until the medical examiner gets up and she talks about the death of Crystal Marie Campbell, a 29-year-old woman and one of three people who was murdered that day at the finishing line.
Dr. Jennifer Hammers turned everything around. The entire tenor of the day, the way, as you stated, it was going toward, there were more points scored for the defense today until she got up there, and it seemed to me everything changed.
Now, the photos from the autopsy were not shown to the public. We didn't see them in that courtroom. They were only shown to the jury. And I watched those jurors, and I watched the state of agitation, tautened facial muscles, hands going to faces, the tears coming. They were struggling, and they were looking at horrible photos as the medical examiner talked about injuries in detail. And I thought it was horrifying that the prosecutor wanted to elicit how long did she live after these catastrophic injuries and establish that she may have lived up to a minute before bleeding out.
In terms of emotion that we've seen through this case, and obviously, you know, a trial was supposed to be focused on facts, and that's what the jurors will be instructed, but let's not kid ourselves, David. You saw it with your own eyes. The facts are one thing, and emotions are another. And that way that doctor sat there and described in clinical detail what those bombs did to the body of Crystal Campbell was devastating to the defense.
It brings us back to the reality that Jahar Tsarnaev was there. He was with his brother. He put a bag down. He knew what was in the bag, and he was part of killing those people. You can't get away from it.
And Monday will be even more devastating and more damaging to the defense, David, because that bomb that killed Martin Richard and Lingzi Liu was placed there by Jahar Tsarnaev.
And it brings us to the end of day 14 and the end of the week in the federal death penalty trial of Zahar Zinayev. From the Moakley Federal Courthouse in Boston, this is Finish Line, inside the Boston Marathon bombing trial. I'm David Boeri for WBUR.
And I'm Kevin Cullen from the Boston Globe.
Join us again next week on Monday when the prosecution is expected to rest its case and the defense will begin its.
Finish Line, Inside the Boston Marathon Bombing Trial, is a co-production of WBUR and the Boston Globe. New episodes of the podcast will be released multiple times a week throughout the trial after court lets out for the day. You can listen at WBUR.org and at bostonglobe.com, or you can subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, where new episodes will appear as soon as they're released. Go to the podcast section of iTunes and search Finish Line to subscribe. Thanks for listening.